It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. Hope you had a wonderful Christmas day and great holiday season so far. As I'm talking to you Sunday morning in a world of electronics and all new kinds of gadgets, and I can only imagine the things that are coming our way in the new year, the whole thing about how we're going to learn and what's going to happen and artificial intelligence and all of these things, I thought it'd be good to just kind of get comfortable for a moment. The Old Farmer's Almanac, looking at edition number 233. And a lot of you might be laughing, and some of you might be saying, the Farmer's Almanac, I'm not familiar with that. Well, it's been around 233 years. Our country, as a country, has been around 250 years coming this July, as far as the Declaration of Independence. So almost as old as the country is the Farmer's Almanac. And it feels very comfortable just holding it in my hands, as opposed to something being typed or looking at a computer or hearing something being given to me by over voice. I'm holding something in my hands the way many of us learned how to learn and read. And in it, the Farmer's Almanac, actually, if you sit down and read it, is a wonderfully engaging read. And I read it every year at the end of the year rather than beginning of the year as a retrospect of what happened versus predictions, as opposed to predictions and then forgetting as the year went on what they said. So looking at it in a retrospect, I'm going to start off with this. For 233 years, patrons of this trusted annal have let us know what's on their minds. In 1825, the publication was most concerned about raising calves, growing asparagus, and keeping a kitchen garden. And they were highly important to farmers and vegetable growers, etc. A century later, in 1925, the almanac focused on raising chickens and how to thwart houseflies and the seven best woods for your fence posts. Here we are in 2025. Just about to enter 2026. And the Farmer Almanac is still talking about reassuringly familiar items. Raising chickens in the backyard, growing plants outside of your hardiness zone, and getting your garden in sync with the moon. I don't know much about astrology. So anyway, I thought I would look at what they had to say. And what they had to say about the year that just happened, and again, I do this as a retrospect, but put in the context of with all the technology we have and everything that's coming. Farmer's Almanac is the most basic of rudimentary ways of predicting the weather. And they do it a year in advance. And you have to wonder, is their way of predicting the weather really that much worse than anybody else's? So we derive our weather forecasts from a secret formula that was devised by the founder of the Farmer's Almanac, Robert B. Thomas, in 1792. Thomas believed that weather on the Earth was influenced by sunspots, which are magnetic storms on the surface of the sun. The almanac goes on to say that over the years, it has refined and enhanced this formula with state-of-the-art technology and using modern scientific calculations, but that it is still based in this most simple formula and foundations that Thomas put together in 1792. So let's have a look at what we did for the past year. Well, the Farmer's Almanac a year ago said that we would have 21 tropical storms named in the Atlantic Ocean. We, in fact, had 13. For the Chicago area, it said that December would be below normal in temperatures and snow. Well, it got the temperatures right. It has been a frigidly cold December in Chicago until the last few days, and of course we now are on the balmy side, but we were not below normal in snow. We had a lot of snow early on. The prairies, really the cradle of all bird life, from about a percentage of about 80% of the birds in North America are raised in the prairies, it said they would be hot and dry. They sure got that right. The prairies have had a tremendously long now 3 to 4 year drought cycle. It has not been broken. It was hot and dry throughout the summer. I thought about Southern California and what happens with the Palisades fire. So I went and had a look at that. It said that the weather in early January in Southern California last year was going to be warm and wet. Well, it was may have been warm, but it sure wasn't wet. And the Santa Ana winds fueled the worst fires in the history of Southern California, and in some ways, from an economic damage, absolutely the worst fires damage that we've ever seen in this country. So it got some things right, and it got some things wrong. The weathermen every day, or weather persons every day, get things right and wrong, and they're dealing with 24-hour time periods. How often do you get up in the morning and it's supposed to rain and the sun's out? So we don't know. But what's kind of interesting is that the Farmer's Almanac covers all kinds of things. And this program, by the way, I'm not asking you to buy the Farmer's Almanac. I'm just saying that I've read it every year of my life since I can remember. It's been a Christmas gift to me, and it continues to be. And I enjoy it. And in this age of high technology, it's kind of interesting to look at what non-technology has to say about our weather, and it's not that bad. But also it covers other things. By the way, we have now gone through, thankfully, the shortest day of the year. December 21st was the shortest day of the year. So now we're inching our way. Every day is going to get longer, which is fabulous, until we reach June 20th, when we will have the longest day of the year. So for those of you who want a little more daylight every day, it's coming your way. The last page of the Farmer's Almanac, though, I find really interesting. It says, talking about my generation. And this has to do with things they deal with, defining moments, astrology, weather, and inventions. And that's on page 64. So the Farmer's Almanac actually isn't that heavy a read. But some of the things on the great outdoors that it talks about in weather, the greatest generation born between 1901 and 1927, the great tri-state tornado in Illinois and Indiana of 1925, and then the Mississippi River flood of 1927, the greatest flood in the history of modern history of the world. Of course, it was not as great a flood as the breaking of the Bonneville Dam on Great Salt Lake, which created the Snake River and the Columbia and went all the way to the Pacific Ocean. But that was 18,000 years ago. So in the last century, it's been the Mississippi River flood. And then they talk about the Silent Generation. The Silent Generation is defined by the Great Depression. So what were the elements of the Silent Generation, which was 1928 to 1945 for the great outdoors? Well, the Great Dust Bowl in the 1930s, which redefined America and how we viewed agriculture. Not only were tens of thousands of people displaced and led to a huge migration west in the country, particularly to California, places like Oklahoma and Kansas were virtually wiped out by the Dust Bowl. People buried alive in their houses overnight. Within minutes, you couldn't see anything. It was just one of the worst ecological catastrophes that the world has seen, and we brought it entirely upon ourselves with the farming practices we were using, and it led to 100 years now, almost 100 years of changes in agricultural practices because of the Great Dust Bowl. So you move to the baby boomers, those of us born between 1946 and 1964, which is probably just a lot of us listening this morning. The first tornado forecast occurred in Oklahoma, 1948. And the first weather satellite went up in 1960. Think about that. We now have so many satellites in the air that there's junk in space. The first one went up in 1960. They talk about Generation X, 1965 to 1980. Well, NOAA was formed during Generation X. And then we had the great blizzard of the U.S. Midwest in 1978. And for those of you in Chicago who remember it, I remember it well. That was really something, 1978. Then they talk about the millennials, 1981 to 1996. Hurricane Andrew was the defining weather moment of their lives when it comes to weather events. And then the current Gen Z, 1997 to 2012, Hurricane Katrina was their hurricane. So we think about weather events that influence our thinking and how we look at the weather. And the Farmer's Almanac and one little nifty page has sort of summarized what we think about when we think about generations and we think about weather. So Farmer's Almanac, as I sign off on this part of the show, is here we are the day, a couple days after Christmas, winding down the new year. It's nice to sit down, whether it's a book, whether it's the Farmer's Almanac or something, and I find it incredibly refreshing to remove myself from technology, data centers being built, and all the news we have, and pick up something familiar and have a chance to reminisce and think about it. The Farmer's Almanac does that. I'll look a year from now, I'll do a show likely on the 2026 Farmer's Almanac, a look back. Here's a couple things I hope it says. I hope it says the drought on the prairies has ended. We cannot take a fourth or fifth year of pounding drought across the prairie breeding grounds. All kinds of birds are suffering. Waterfowl populations are plummeting. Some species of waterfowl ducks are at near record lows. The prairies are parched. They need to have, and these cycles run a long time. We were in a period of extreme wet on the prairies, unprecedented wet, in fact, for many years, and now we've gone back into a very bad dry cycle. One of the things that would be most helpful for those of us who love birds, birding, the outdoors, is to see the prairies get wet this winter with lots of snow. It needs to start soon. We're already just about into January. I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors, and when I come back, when I do, I'm going to continue a conversation I had last week about a drive I made and some thoughts that occur as you do drive around America revolving conservation, agriculture, and opportunities ahead. Thanks so much for listening on this holiday weekend. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. First, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Hope you enjoyed my little reading of the Farmer's Almanac, a reflection on what took place in the past year. They get it right sometimes. They don't get it right other times. But at least it's interesting reading. And I would say if you match the Farmer's Almanac predictions for a year out with those of the most modern technology available, some cases you might not find a lot of difference. So last week I mentioned about a drive I made reminiscing from Memphis, Tennessee down to Greenville, Mississippi, and what's happened with the agricultural landscape in the 4 decades I've made that drive. It occurred to me I got a lot of feedback on it, so I thought I would expand for a second and talk about opportunity. We're about to enter a new year, the 250th anniversary of America. It's an opportunity for us to not only reflect on things, but to maybe look forward on how we can do things differently. And when it comes to agriculture, and I've been involved in agriculture all of my life, and I find it fascinating, and I also find conservation fascinating and important. Agriculture and conservation go together. We as a country, though, have not done well at recognizing that agriculture, farmers, landowners, people producing food for our country and the world are doing so because they're surviving. They're producing food that they get paid for. And the more that landowners can be paid for their land, the better off they are. It is no different than a factory or any kind of business trying to get a better bottom line, which everybody in America does on a corporate basis every single day. You can hardly blame the American farmer for the incredible degradation of our natural resources. The American farmer has a job to do, raise grain for America and the world, and raise it as inexpensively as it possibly can, and also to produce the greatest crops possible. And we have the greatest agricultural production in the world here in the United States. On the other hand, that has come with an enormous cost to conservation, water quality, air quality, soil quality. It doesn't have to be this way, particularly with all the modern technology and equipment and everything we have now, the pinpoint where you can literally, going through a field, you can decide where to put a pesticide down, where to put a herbicide down, where to put chemicals, literally to within the foot going through a field with modern, with the equipment we have and the use of satellites. So we have had a carrot and stick sort of mentality for a long time. It doesn't work. The stick being the federal government or the state saying, you can't do this. You cannot drain that wetland. You can't cut that tree. You can't do this. You can't do that. Landowners hate it. They view it as an invasion of their private property rights, and who can blame them? The carrot has worked a few times in history and has worked incredibly well, but it's primarily worked because agriculture was under economic duress. Most recently, in the mid-'80s, we came up with the Conservation Reserve Program, a massive program that took over 40 million acres out of production and put it back to wildlife habitat that improved water quality and improved, it dramatically reduced soil erosion. And it went on for about 30 years, doing really well. Started in 1985 and peaked in the early, well, it had certainly peaked by 2010. We had over 40 million acres, 25 million acres of it on the prairies, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, Montana, the breadbasket, if you will, of the bird world for the United States. And why did the Conservation Reserve Program come into being? Because agriculture was in a terrible financial state. Some people called it CPR instead of CRP. But it did something for society. It delivered a huge societal benefit. It also took enormous quantities of grain off the market because we had a worldwide glut of grain, and grain prices were falling. So Congress, in 1985, passed the Farm Bill, which launched the Conservation Reserve Program. The result? We had over 30 years of booming bird populations. We had incredible numbers of pheasants and quail and bird life in all across America, and we had much better water quality. As commodity prices increased and the demand for more and more grain continued, Conservation Reserve Program has been whittled down and whittled down, and now it's less than half of what it was, and it's probably heading for the way of the dodo bird, going bye-bye. It shouldn't be this way. The Conservation Reserve Program is the carrot, is the financial incentive that agricultural interests need to do societal good. We cannot expect agriculture at large to benefit the environment for society if there is not an economic benefit to them. You have to pay taxes on your land. You've got all the expenses you have. And every acre you take out of production as an agricultural producer is an acre that's costing you money. And so in 2026, as we're about to have it, 2026, we are again in a situation where agricultural prices are depressed, input costs have gone up terribly, and we're entering a period, I don't know if it'll be 1 year or 10 years, we don't know, of where agriculture is really under duress. So once again, we have an opportunity to work with agriculture from a conservation perspective and say, what can we do on the land that is good for society and good for agriculture? When times are great and agriculture is making lots of money, it's very hard to think about conservation. When times get tough, as they are right now for agriculture, there's an opportunity here to do things that really benefits all of us. So the drive I took from Memphis to Greenville showed the extent of the environmental damage to the Mississippi Delta. How about if you drive across the prairies or take a drive across Illinois? In Illinois in the 1970s, we shot over 2 million quail and we shot about 1.5 million pheasants. Last year in Illinois, I don't think we cracked 200,000 birds respectively. We've lost 90% of the habitat we had. We've lost 90% of the bird populations we had. Take this drive on across the prairies, go into the Dakotas, and you're looking at massive drainage going on. Wetlands that were there even as recently as 20 years ago were gone. Take a drive further west. Go to California. Look at the Central Valley of California. There's nothing that can live in the Central Valley of California unless you actually are managing it for wildlife. The Central Valley of California, as far as you can see, is the most intensively managed farming region and the most productive soils in all the world, 365-day cropland, which is why the agricultural prices of land are so high and why the production is so high. The only places in California that have any wildlife habitat in the Central Valley are either National Wildlife Refuge, long ago protected, or lands that are protected by private individuals who love to hunt. And they made the comment last week that we see all the time as you travel, the lands that are being protected for wildlife, for hunting and fishing, are being done so primarily by the private sector, people who have interest in hunting and fishing. Beyond that, the lands are being farmed. And that is part of the issue we have in America. We don't recognize the value of conservation to society at large. So we have an opportunity in the new year, the 250th, of America, our anniversary, to really look at this. How can we, as conservation and agriculture, work together to come up with lasting solutions, not temporary fixes? Conservation Reserve Program, as it turns out, was one of the best ideas we've ever had, but it was a temporary fix. And once things got better, farmers went to planting grain, and agricultural producers, whether you be John Deere or Monsanto or ConAgra or whatever, you didn't want land out of production because it wasn't adding to your bottom line. We should think about the overall health of society, of conservation and agriculture working together. And I can virtually guarantee you, as I'm talking this morning, every agricultural producer I know would raise their hand and say, I want to do that, but I need help in doing that. I can't do great things for the American environment when I also have to pay all the bills. I need help in doing a combination of things that grow America's produce and crops and cattle, at the same time doing good things for conservation. So it can't be disjointed anymore. And I hope in the new year we move past that and really come up with far-ranging thinking as to how we permanently can have conservation and agriculture work together. Next Sunday morning, it will be, in fact, the new year, 2026. And I'm going to talk about some things that are in Congress, either having just passed or on the agenda, plus much more in the look ahead. In the meantime, I hope you have a great last week of 2025. Thank you so much for listening. And 2026, in fact, begins my 26th year on the Great Outdoor Show. All the best. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. This is Charlie Potter, the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.